want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, geocache, And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 203 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on May 11th, 2011. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Hen Hard Hat.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, and we love hearing from our listeners. And that number is 206-3503-GPS. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is sponsored by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all of your caching needs. Welcome back, you guys. Daryl, you weren't here last week. Are you feeling any better?
Yeah, I'm actually feeling a lot better. Still nowhere close to 100%. But that was one of those just weird colds, kind of came on quick. A lot of people in the area were getting sick with a bunch of different colds. This one wasn't anything like anyone else had, really, but it was similar to a bunch of different things that other people had. But it completely knocked me out pretty much Wednesday through Friday. I actually, for the first time Friday, got out of bed and, you know, moved out to the living room. But Saturday, I was up and about, and Sunday, I was riding again. I actually got about 22 miles on the bike on Sunday, and about 5 or 6 miles, I think, of walking. No, it was more like 7 or 8. So, you know, by Sunday I was up and about and, you know, getting back to normal, but nowhere near what, you know, I'd like to be doing. And I've been suffering from a huge lack of caching too. You know, we were planning on going out, trying to get some caches this weekend, but you know, the weekend before we spent doing all podcasting stuff. Last weekend I was sick, so I couldn't really do too much, or you know, recovering from being sick. But at least tonight I got out and did some caching. You know, we had the monthly meet and eat that we always do around here every second Wednesday, I think it is, of the month. Yeah, that would make sense. The second Wednesday of the month. And so I got 5 caches in the event. So, hey, you know, some caches.
Yeah, definitely cool. You know, it for me, we've just, I've been riding my bike a lot like you too. And so it's been nice enough to ride my bike, and I'm really enjoying getting out and riding my bike a lot. And now, like we've talked about episode 102 and 168, now I just got to get that RAM mount for my GPS so I can do some caching by bike. So I'm excited.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So,
and you know, I've got the mount from Biologic, I think it is. And one of these days I'm going to have to do a little write up on this thing, but it's for the iPhone 3GS series, and for the iPhone 4, it just has different inserts. And that thing has been awesome, and that replaces my cycle computer. So pretty much I can have everything in that one device now.
That's pretty cool.
So let me get this straight. So you both are out riding your bikes. That means the final snowdrifts have finally gone away, yes?
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. Today we are up to almost 80 degrees.
Yeah, you know, Daryl, I'm looking forward to seeing that review and maybe a link to it, because I'm really interested in purchasing either, you know, that something for like an iPod, an iPhone, or a GPS. So I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah, now this thing doesn't do the iPod Touch. There are some other ones out there that are cheaper too, but the, you know, this thing is awesome because it's a hard case, all inclusive, weather sealed, so you don't have to worry about it getting rained on while you're on the bike. You know, as long as you've got something cordless, there's no cords, but I like to have the corded headphone a lot of the time because, you know, when it's raining, you're not going to have the Bluetooth. You know, Bluetooth stuff isn't weather sealed very well.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, though, that's pretty cool is the same company that makes this also makes a connection. So if you have one of those uber exciting bikes that has the dymo in the front wheel, it will actually power your iPod or iPhone as well. So that's pretty cool. You know, it doesn't have a whole lot of room for the cable to connect in the base, but they actually built that in so it still closes and still seals around that. So I'm just even anxious to try taking a regular you know, external USB battery pack, you know, run the cable down the top bar and, you know, throw it in the saddlebag or something.
Now, what was the name of that holder you were talking about again for the...
It's by Biologic, if I remember. I'll have to look it up, and, you know, I want to do the whole write-up on it now that I've had some time to actually use it. So, you know, we'll talk about that in one of the coming shows.
Sounds good. Now, Head Hard Hat, I see that you've been creating more cache containers, and I love seeing your cache containers. Tell me about your latest one.
Well, I actually did get some geocaching in, too, with my my lunchtime geocache of the day. But over the weekend, a viewer actually told me about what would make, and I really think it does make, a really cool waterproof-type geocache. Have you guys ever heard of those? They're for paintballs. They're made, or they're pods that are actually made to hold paintballs while you're doing your, you know, your battles in there.
Sure.
Have you ever seen those before?
Yeah,
the one that I got, I think I went to a local sporting goods is where I first started, just to see if I could find them. And the one that I have is called a View Loader, is the company that actually makes these. And it's about, oh, give or take, about 8 inches in length. It's about 2 inches in diameter. And it actually has a spring top. I don't know if you can hear this or not, but that's the lid. And that's how solid... When you actually close this thing, I've submerged it for an hour and not a drop goes in. And I think it's going to be one of those things that, because it's made of plastic, if you use plastic-based spray paint on them, really holds the paint very well. I think this would be a really sneaky geocache where you have, like, say, in a log or in an area where you can have 8 inches worth of depth, and then have that, you know, nice 2-inch, 2.5-inch diameter to put something, and it's got a flat top to it. So it's going to have a very little surface area, and if you cami the top of that lid, I think you could really come up with some really creative areas to put this thing. And it's big enough that I would actually, I wouldn't call it a regular, but I would call it a large small for a geocache container. They're pretty cool.
Definitely very cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. That, you know, the 2 inches, though, definitely, I think, would limit it to the small size.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I heard they do come in other sizes, some a little bigger, some a little smaller. And if you have an area, I would imagine even for like a cinder block hole or something like that, you know, people, the geocachers out there are extremely creative, and I'm sure they're going to come up with some cool ways of taking that idea and running with it.
Very cool. I'll take a look at that when you get it posted. Is that up yet?
I will have that up on my blog by tomorrow, and I will send the link so it can go into the show notes.
Oh, awesome.
Very, very cool. Geocaching
question of the day. The Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is The Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Have you ever geocached with your mother? Since we just passed Mother's Day, I thought this was a very relevant question. 80% of the fortunate geocachers that replied said yes, they had geocached with their mother. So tell me, have you geocached with your mother? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight, we are going to be talking about the Explorist 610 GPS from Magellan. I've had this little GPS in my possession for quite a while now. I've got a review unit, and so I figured it's about time to review it since I've had it a while and done geocaching with it, but not done the review. So tonight, if you're not familiar with the Explorist the Magellan Explorist 610. It's got a high sensitivity surf starfall star 3 GPS reception. And it's very user friendly. It's 3.0 inch touchscreen, and it's got a couple customizable buttons on the side. it comes with some very cool maps and a 3-axis compass. The thing I thought was kind of cool about it, and I've not ever used this with any other GPS yet, is the built-in 3.2 megapixel camera, microphone, and speaker. And you can also record not just pictures, but some like movies too. Micro SD slot, paperless geocaching. It's waterproof to IPX7 and takes two AA batteries. And so I popped it out of the box, and my first impression was it's very nice. It's a fairly small unit. It's definitely smaller than my my GPS Map 76 from Garmin.
That's one of the things that I really liked about the Explorers GC, and these are about the same size as the Explorers GC, is it is such a small, convenient, fits well in your hand size unit, much more so than most of the Garmin or DeLorme units, especially like the Lorenz seems big and boxy to me. So that's one thing I think that Magellan has really done well with. But to give people an idea too, the Explorers 510, 610, and 710 are roughly the same unit. They're all the touchscreen units. The big difference is that the 510 doesn't have things like the 3-axis compass. It doesn't have the barometers, so you don't get the barometric pressure, so you don't get the accurate
no
altitude
topo
readings.
Maps.
Yeah, and then it gets into the fact of which maps come with which ones. But all three of those touchscreen units are pretty much the same. The big thing I like with the 710 over the 610 is that it does have more RAM. The 610 only has about 500 megs, while the 710 has 3 gigs, and again, different types of maps and whatnot. But the other one that's kind of interesting that we haven't seen yet, and I'm not 100% sure it's even shipping, is the Explorers 310, because that's more like the original GC that we're used to, that has the joystick, the buttons, and no touchscreen. So if you're one of the people who doesn't like the touchscreen, doesn't really want the camera, that's going to be a cheap alternative. And from what I've seen, this thing's going to come in at under $200. So it's going to be a great, cheap unit for a lot of cachers. For the more serious cachers who like the touchscreen, this is something to look at. And all of these have that IPX7 waterproof rating, which means you get 30 minutes at 1 meter in their testing. Now, the Explorers GC, we've heard some problems with that, so I don't know how much I'd really trust these for the waterproof.
Yeah.
How, Andy, when you open it up and you take a look at the batteries in that, how good is that seal? Does it look like something that's going to be durable and going to be taking some pounding?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, the seal is pretty good. I mean, I would say I would be comfortable with dropping this unit, on the trail and things like that. I wouldn't want to necessarily drop it on the cement. But it does look, the seal along the battery case is definitely a rubber seal. The buttons are well sealed in there. The screen is the issue where I may have an issue there. If the screen got, a decent amount of water on it, I can't really tell. I mean, it's got a bezel on it, so I can't really tell how tight that is exactly. But one of the issues that I did have with it was, it does say in the specs that it gets about 15 hours of average battery life, and it does take two AA batteries. What I did find with it, though, is, my CSX... Map 76 CSX, I can throw that in my dresser drawer, not use it for a month, 2 months, and I'll be fine. This I've had in my backpack and it's been off, and it seems like if I don't use it, I pull it out and the batteries are dead no matter what. So I don't, there's something internally.
Well, on the Explorers GC, there's two different modes. There's actually a power off and there's a sleep. And in sleep mode, it still keeps like a slower polling going just so that it has an idea where it is. The whole point being, if you're not using it, you throw it in the back deck of your car or whatever, and it will still know where you are. So when you fire it up, it's not going to have to go through that long process of trying to find satellites again.
Yeah, but I that is a really cool feature, but I did make sure it was off when I pushed the button and it powered down. It didn't just go into sleep mode. So I don't know if it
uses... there's definitely some kind of power drain there that they need to look at.
Yeah, I'd be curious if anybody else is having that issue.
And I did upgrade the firmware to the latest firmware recently, and it seems to still be an issue. So it doesn't seem like it's addressed with this latest version of the firmware. You did mention, Daryl, the touchscreen that is on it. You know, it was weird for me to first get used to it because, you know, it's been a long time since I've had a touchscreen besides my iPhone or my iPod. And so this is definitely a different kind of touchscreen. It's the resistive type touchscreen, not the capacitive like the iPhone is and iPod. So you have to actually kind of push down on the screen to get it to move and do anything. I find myself touching really light because I'm used to the iPod. And so it was a little bit weird to get used to at first, but...
Well, and the other thing is it doesn't have that same feel, so you can't really slide stuff around like you're used to. It's a very different feel, but the nice thing about having that resistive is it does mean you can use it with gloves.
Which is, I mean, what we want. I mean, because it's definitely, you know, if you're going to be hiking and you're going to be out in the cold and or the rain or whatever, you're going to want something like this as opposed to your iPhone, because it's something that, you know, like you said, it's designed to be fairly waterproof, you know, as far as water resistant. And so this is what I would rather take in with me if I was going out in the cold and the snow rather than the iPhone.
I would guess with something like that, you really wouldn't want an iPod or an iPad type of easy resistance. I would want something that's going to take a little more of an oomph to move things around, because you know how things go. You have it on its strap, you're holding it in your hand, you're not necessarily paying attention to what you're doing, and you may not necessarily want things moving around anyways.
Yeah, you definitely always have to worry about a screen lock or something like that. The real problem, though, becomes for those of us who are so used to using the smartphones and the tablets and whatnot, that these touchscreens are different enough that it can pose a problem. And that's why a lot of the people I know really still prefer those button units, you know, the older 60 style, the 62s, the 76 and the 78s, because it does have those buttons and it's not the contact switching that it takes to go between these very, very different styles of touchscreens.
One of the things that I liked about it is it does have, like they said, it has three hard buttons on the side, one of them being power, one of them being a user programmed one, and then one being the picture button. So it is nice because you can, it's easy to get the phone out, or not the phone, I'm sorry, the GPS out, and we were just talking about phones, and take a picture fairly quickly. And so it is nice there. And when you touch the screen, it does bring up four buttons in either of the corners. The very top left one is going to be like you can go between like your dashboard of the satellite accuracy, things like that, the barometer, the altimeter, and the different, like switching between the profiles and all that information type things. And then the one to the right is going to be you can program user shortcuts in here too. So there's like one, you can go right to your home or base camp. You can mark those things in there. You can assign different buttons to do different things. So if you can kind of customize easy shortcuts to get different things that you're going to be doing a lot like that. And then the one in the left bottom left-hand corner is the one that, as far as the geocaching, you're going to be using a lot. It takes it to the waypoint type things where you can save your tracks, you can get to your waypoints, you can see your tracks, your geocaches, your switch between the maps, the POI. That's also where you can go ahead and see the media that you've taken, whether it be pictures, audio, or movies. You can see all that information in there. And then the very bottom one on the right is going to be kind of like if you're routing to a cache, it has information on that in there. You can backtrack and pause the track, reset the odometer, see your switch between your maps, things like that. What I did mention that it does have the geocaching function right built in, which is very, very nice because you can click on it. If you take the GPX logs in there, or the GPX files, you can see the different logs. You can see the hint. You can see all the information on it like that. And then you can, in the attributes, and then you can go ahead and log it right from here. If you're going to it, you can log the cache. And it's very handy. You know, I liked it. One thing that I did feel kind of weird about, I mean, like it was kind of a little bit weird, is you can enter the comments as soon as you mark it as found. So that takes it into the... that takes it right into your field notes. One thing that was a little bit weird is because I am used to it on the iPod Touch, being able to turn it sideways and get the full keyboard. This, it has, you get like on the first screen, A through L, and then you can go switch over and get the rest of the alphabet and then the numbers and things like that. So for me, I mean, the default log right away is just found, which is usually for me was suffice because I go back in and edit more things when I'm at my computer. So for me, just marking it found is usually fine, and getting the field notes like that. One thing that I did find a little bit weird was uploading the field notes themselves. And like, if you're used to having like a Garmin unit and things like that, where you can, or any other unit you can plug in via USB, you usually get like the storage device only. Like this actually stores the OS, if you will, right on. You can see the memory, you can see the OS and everything like that. So I was a little bit uncomfortable with that because, I mean, I'm a computer user. I know, you know, a fairly advanced computer user. I know not to touch things that I don't know anything about, or if I want to mess around and screw things up, I know I can do that too. You know, if I wasn't thinking and I deleted a file that I needed, I don't know how easy this would be to get back up and running, because it is, you know, kind of like in your Windows machine. If you delete something that you're not supposed to delete, you're not going to get your machine booting. Same type of thing here. So
that now, Andy, I believe that this is still a Windows CE device, like the Explorer's GC is.
So. It is.
Yeah, it is essentially Windows. It's just that lighter version. Quick question, though, going back to the information that you can get in there. Have you tried using the, what is it called? The Vantage Point, I believe, software that comes with to load the GPX files or the, you know, the Pocket Queries through that?
No, I have not. I actually went ahead and just did it straight from drag and dropped into the unit itself. It has a folder where to put them. So I've just drag and dropped the GPXs in directly.
Yeah. And well, that's one of the things that was really nice with the GC. And I assume, I haven't tried it, of course, but I assume that the newer Explorer X10 series will also support this, is if you're going to use that Vantage Point software, you can actually pull the Pocket Queries right off of the GC server, so you don't have to download or anything else. You just grab them and go. But it will actually import the images for the caches as well, so you'll have those offline. And that's what, to me, really made the Explorer's GC so unique from any other paperless option, is that it had the option to grab all of those images that otherwise just get left out.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to try that. You know, that's a good thing. I'll try that tomorrow and let you guys know next week. But yeah, that is definitely very good. You know, like I said, it takes decent pictures, and we'll go ahead and link to some of those pictures that I've taken with this unit, so you guys can kind of see what kind of pictures it takes. You know, obviously it's not for you, Daryl. You know, you commented when we first got this unit, when I first got this unit to review, and you saw my pictures. You know, it is a cell phone type of camera. So for you, you're not going to want to go and take out like the professional looking pictures with it, because you can't. But
yeah, it's, you know, it's your typical in-phone camera from, you know, the feature phones that we're more used to. It's not the level of something like an Android or an iOS camera. Yeah, so it doesn't take the pictures in the dark. It doesn't have the autofocus, but it is a nice camera to just have with you for those quick grabs. And the thing to remember too is that anything that you take on there is geotagged, so all of that information about where you were is going to be with any of those photos, so they're great for reference in the future.
Hey, Daryl, by the way, I did check on this. I'm looking right now at some of the descriptions. It does have autofocus, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. I seem to have remembered that this one did not have autofocus.
No, it said 3.2 megapixel camera with autofocus.
Oh,
it was one of those things that I was kind of curious when I first read that. It's like, why have a camera on a GPS? But then again, why not?
Well, especially if you're going to be off-road, you know, and, you know, doing stuff that you don't want to risk your phone with or your better camera, it's nice to have that with it. The problem that we have as geocachers is most of the time when you want the camera, the description requires that you have the GPS in the photo. Well, if your camera is the GPS, you can't get both in. So, you know, that's a problem for geocachers. But having that camera in there is so nice, especially with that geotagging. You know, you can get so much information without having to do anything, because it stores that right.
And you
in
get
the file.
That moment of, you know, the fawn that happens to wander 10 feet from you, and you don't have the time to dig out that camera out of your backpack. I could definitely see an advantage with that.
Absolutely. And if you're, you know, looking for a good fishing spot, you can grab a photo of this, you know, bridge or whatever that looks like it's going to be a great spot to go fishing, and you'll have that location with that photo.
Well, and what I found too, and when we talked a little bit pre-show, head hard at, you know, you mentioned the same thing, you know, why have it in a camera in your GPS? What I like is, you know, I've got an iPod Touch, and that's where I do most of my logging and stuff from. You know, we've talked about different programs that I use on that. But this, you know, that doesn't have a camera because I've got one of the older style iPod Touches. And so for me, if I want to take a picture of the container, I want to take a picture of people around the container, things like that, I'm not going to have that information with me. For me, I don't like taking, I've got a point and shoot camera. It's a little bit bigger style point and shoot. And so I don't like taking that with me caching all the time. I mean, it's one thing if I take the kids, but if I'm just caching by myself, I don't have that point and shoot with me. And so for me to have this right in my GPS that I'm already using, you know, it's very nice because, you know, I, especially if, you know, like you and I, you know, we've done caches on our lunches and things like that. I don't, especially don't take my phone or my camera to lunch. And so I, you know, this I've got with me already because I'm caching. It's easy to take. And again, like Daryl said, it's geotagged. So you really can't lose there. You know, again, you have to be careful then what pictures you post because your geotag information isn't there if you don't want people to know where you're at.
Indeed. And also it can't be completely dismissed that this is an IPX7 device. Your camera generally can't take any water. You know, if it gets rained on a little, it's probably going to be okay. But most phones, most cameras, you know, you've got those holes for the speakers, for the microphones. You've got the moving parts with the zoom lenses on the cameras. So they're not quite as durable as this is going to be. So as a, you know, in the field device, this is just going to be, you know, safer than taking a camera or a, you know, smartphone.
Now, one thing that I did like about this too is it does have the ability to take pictures or video with it too. And the video is an MP4 file. It's okay. It's not the best video, but it is video. And we'll link to a picture that I kind of took today. And I took this video inside. So, I mean, just imagine if I took it outside, it'd be, you know, the sun and everything like that. It'd be a little bit better. One kind of little weird quirk I found with it, though, too, is, you know, normally, especially like with this, I'm going to be holding the unit up and down, you know, like I would hold it in my hand to cache. If I take a video like that and then play it back on the device, it plays back fine. If I take that same file to my computer, it ends up being sideways. So I don't understand what happened there, but I was playing around with it and was able to get the picture to turn out right, you know, just by holding the phone or the iPod, I'm sorry, the GPS sideways. I was able to get, you know, a photo that was the right side, you know, when you played it back on the computer. So, I mean, you just got to kind of keep that in mind as you're taking the video, because, you know, it's not like that with the photo. The photo turns out right, but if you take a video, it turns it on its side for some reason.
Hey, I was kind of curious, Andy. When you actually took it out, they are really hyping this as being a ultra-sensitive kind of GPS. How did it do as far as the bouncing arrow or any of the other type of deficiencies that you sometimes run across with GPS devices?
I've had very good luck with it. When I took it out, you know, the first cache that I found with it, it was right on the money. Most of the caches that I found was right on the money. No real bouncing around. You know, in fact, I'm sitting inside a basement right now, not real close to the window, probably 15 feet from the window in a basement, and I've got a satellite lock on it right now. And the only issue that I really had is there's a bridge, kind of like a tunnel, and there's a cache on this area that's kind of cut down low. It bounced around there quite a bit, but I kind of expected that because it's high metal side walls on this bike trail type of thing. So I expected that to happen there, and it did. I mean, that part of that was not knowing even where to look too. So for me, it was kind of hard because it has all these little ridges in this metal, and then also there was, since it was kind of a tunnel type thing, you were able to go up to and be on the sides of the tunnel up high, and so I really wasn't sure where the cache was. So for me, that cache was hard to find, but I had trouble with this and with my 76 on it. So I really expected it, you know, because you were kind of down low and by metal, so I kind of expected bouncing there.
Yeah, there's going to be issues with high accuracy, high sensitivity GPSs in those kind of situations, because they're trying to interpret every little last bit of information, and they have the better antennas. And that's where you'll find that some of the less sensitive units can sometimes be actually better, because they they don't accept some of these weaker refractions as actual signals, because, well, they can't even find them.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Now, the last piece of media that you can do with this is you can record audio. And I mean, yes, I like high quality audio, you know, type good sounding audio, but this is really unacceptable. Like I took a recording, and we'll link to this in the show notes too, but you could barely make out what I was saying. And I've tried different things. It sounds really overdriven. And I tried, you know, moving it back away from my mouth. I tried putting it closer to my mouth. I tried a lot of different things. I tried it in the car. I've tried it out of the car. And no matter what I did, it just did not sound good while recording. Now, one word of caution is I have not tried it since I did the updated software. But from what I remember, that was nothing that they addressed in that software update.
You know, I think this was going to be a really, you know, when they actually do get this kind of a technology built in, if you think about it, all those times that you wanted to save those travel bug numbers, or if you've got a note that you want to remember while you're geocaching, that really is a cool place to store it.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this too is, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with Evernote. I know Daryl uses Evernote all the time.
Oh, big time, big time.
If the same type of thing here, you know, on Evernote, if you take a note on your Android or your iPhone or whatever has a GPS in it, it tags the note with a location, and then you can see it on a map. The same type of thing with this GPS. If you leave any sort of media, whether it be a picture, a movie, or an audio note, when you're looking at the map, as long as it's still on your device, you can see exactly where that was on the map too. So, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to go back and see, oh yeah, this note was here, if you're looking at the map itself.
Well, that's always nice. And, you know, we don't see enough of that, in my opinion. You know, so much of our recollection and the way that we remember things is based on location. So having that visualized on the map is just really awesome.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, that's my basic review of this unit. Daryl, Hat, do you guys have any other quick questions, or if there's any questions in the chat room here, I'd love to answer them. You know, it's been a good review unit. You know, I would really love to purchase one myself. Besides the battery drain unit, or the battery drain, you know, I give it a thumbs up, and for the price, it's really decent. And so I would definitely, you know, I definitely like the all-inclusive type GPS geocaching unit. You know, it does the notes and the geocaching stuff really pretty decently, and the pictures are really good. Again, I wouldn't use it for audio, but you know, I don't find myself taking many notes too, so, or audio.
Yeah,
notes.
Now this is priced at list price at about $450 US, so that puts it in the range of the higher end Oregons, the 78 and the 62s and the new PN60s. So, you know, it's in that kind of range. It does have the topo maps. But how do you really feel that it's working as a geocaching device? I mean, you've got the 76, which most of us are familiar with.
Do
you think it's worth the upgrade?
It's always hard for me to say. I really do like the Garmin unit just because I'm really familiar with it. And I know that there's a lot of ways to hack it, if you will, as far as doing, you know, different things. I'm really, really familiar with that. But as far as a geocaching unit, I really do like this because it has the ability to put all of the information right in it, as far as, you know, seeing the cache description and the logs and things like that. You know, I'm used to having two devices, like, you know, like you are, because you do the notes and type things on your iPhone, and so I do the same thing with my iPod. So for me, I found myself kind of doing a hybrid of both, because I would kind of take the more detailed notes in my iPod, but then I would, you know, if I wanted, I would also double mark it as I found it on the unit, just in case something were to happen to my iPod. But I mean, I really do like it as a geocaching unit. It's very intuitive. You know, right out of the box, I could get it out, I could plug it in and go caching. You know, I really didn't even need to read anything on it. I really thought it was a good unit. You can do 2000 waypoints in it. Now, I don't know if that's separate from the geocaches, if those count in the same thing as the geocaches, but it does do 2,000 waypoints.
Well, the geocaches on this device, if memory serves, it allows 10,000 through the GPXs. You know what? Let me see if I can actually look that up while we're chatting here.
But Would the other one end up being point of interest then?
No. The geocaches are actually separate from everything else. That's one of the interesting things, is that they actually have the geocaches on these devices handled separately because it is the GPX file. And yes, it is 10,000 geocaches that you can store in there. So you can load up a whole bunch. You know, you've got 2,000 waypoints, 200 routes, and it does have 200 tracks. So you're right up there with most of the really high-end GPSs that you can get right now for hiking and whatnot. You know, and a lot of this spec-wise is the same on the less expensive 310. And Andy, as you were saying, I really like having that two-handed thing where I'm, you know, navigating with the GPS, which is more accurate, and reading the cache description, doing my notes, that kind of stuff, on the better screen, the, you know, easier to access, better interface stuff with my smartphone or with my PDA. So I kind of really want to try that 310 because that thing is cheap and has many of the same features.
Now, we've had a couple different questions in the chat room here. One of the questions is it like the Orgon that you cannot delete a cache on the unit? No, you can actually delete a cache right off the unit with the interface. So if you don't want a cache there or you're done with it or whatever like that, you can go ahead and delete right off of the unit. And then the other question was, can you set it to route up when street routing, but north when not routing? I don't know. I was never able to get it to actually do any actual routing on it, at least with the map that came with it. I mean, it does show streets and everything, but I was never able to get it to do routing. I mean, I may be wrong.
Well, I believe in order to do the routing in the streets, you have to go to the 710. I don't think the 610 supports anything beyond just the topo maps. So that's one of those specific to the unit things. So I don't really know because I haven't done any of the routing on it.
Yeah. And same here. You know, I don't know because we can't route with this unit that we have, but you can do different profiles. So like, you can do like a driving profile and a geocaching profile and set your different settings, that you like there. So if you're driving, you can set one, route, you know, up. And then when you're not, do route north if you wanted to do that, which is pretty nice.
Now, another question here is from Time Age in the chat room, asking simply, is it better than the Orgon? And one of the things to remember, it's very different than the Orgon. Overall, I would say yes. My experience with the Explorist series is the interface is a newer, better interface. It has better support for the paperless caching. But it does not support the Where I Go, and currently the Orgon is the only GPS in the line from Garmin that even does that. Their newer units are dropping the Where I Go. So if you want the Where I Go, you're going to have to stick with those Orgons.
Yeah. I've got a question for you guys real quick, too. Do you think that this is actually going to put Magellan back on the map in the GPS arena?
Well, I think the Explorers GC has already done that because it is such a low-cost unit. You're talking about a GPS that's right in that price range of the GeoMate Junior. You know, it's a little bit more expensive, but by the time you get the update kit from GeoMate Junior, you're right at the same kind of price. You've got the maps, you've got the full screen. So I think that really put them back on the maps. They needed to get a new GPS out that would be more for the serious hikers, more for the serious geocachers, you know, because the geocaching support in these are great, but that's such a small portion of what the real enthusiast handheld GPS market wants. So I think this is moving them back in there, and they've got some good stuff at a good price.
It'll be interesting in the holidays which one they're going to want underneath their Christmas tree.
I I can tell you this though, you know, I do like this unit. And I've always been, like, as I mentioned before, a Garmin guy. You know, both my previous GPSs were Garmins. And I do like this. It's definitely a smaller unit than my 76, which is nice because, you know, especially you throw a lanyard on here, it's easier to carry, not quite as bulky when you're walking down and just have it on your neck. It's way easier to pass off as a cell phone too. Definitely. I mean, it's still pretty thick, as far as cell phones go, but, it's one of those things that, I mean, I definitely would recommend it, you know, to anybody starting up, because it's definitely a pretty easy unit to use. And, you know, I threw a micro, I was running out of space on the internal memory, because the OS does take up quite a bit of space, but, you know, I threw a 2 gig card SD card in there and micro SD card, and, you know, I'm good to go and can save all my stuff on there.
Now, the con man and Oki Paladin have brought up some more interesting points about the Where I Go that bear mention here. Part of the problem with the Oregon and the Colorados, and I believe the new V500 from Garmin, all of which supported the Where I Go, they did not support the audio. So audio is supported in the Where I Go cartridges. It is supported on the original Windows CE client, and it is supported by a lot of the smartphone apps. And there are a number of the Where I Go cartridges that are coming out that now that the smartphones are becoming more common, you can get those players for just about every smartphone out there. They're coming out and supporting the audio stuff. So you have to have the audio. So even the Oregons aren't going to be able to support it. And Conman actually says there's no speaker in the Garmin units, and there actually is a speaker. It's just not the sound chip that they need to be able to support it. You know, especially on like the Nuvies, it does all of the voice work, but it's not, from what I've been told by the Garmin folks, it's not compatible with the audio format that they're using in the Where I Go cartridges.
Well, this has definitely been a very, very good show. I really liked this unit. I'm going to definitely recommend it to people and going to hate having to send it back, but that's life. So I think that's going to go ahead and end up our review here. If you've got any other questions, go ahead and shoot us a voicemail, 206-350-3GPS, or shoot us an email. You know, we'd be glad to answer any more of these questions here. Before we close, though, I do want to remind people that, or inform you guys, we're going to have an interview from somebody that's not here in the US. And so for us to do the interview, they would be way in bed by the time we did our interview here at 9:30 Eastern. So we're actually going to be doing our show next week at 7:30 PM Eastern time. And so that way they can not have to be wake them up from a slumber to do the interview. And we will be talking about the European GeoCoin Fest. So this is the first time that the European countries are going to have a coin fest. So we are going to be talking with the organizer of that. And that'll be next week again at 7:30 PM Eastern, right here, same place. So thank you guys for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Cache Advance for sponsoring this episode of the Geocaching Podcast. And we want to remind you that you can join us each Wednesday at 9:30 PM Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live and participate with us at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes for this and every other past episode can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line. And again, that number is 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching, guys.